vacancies in VR, which is really why we're sitting at about the same amount that we were last year. Because I don't necessarily want to be like, okay, we're going to spend all these funds, and then, oh gosh, we have hire staff, and then not have funds to pay the staff, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does. You have to budget for what you want to have, and then pay what you do have.
Yes. So it's a tricky place to be in.
Anyone has any more comments, you know, please feel free to share those now. I just want to remind people that the meeting is being recorded, and I think it's Rhea, who may not know all of our voices, so if you could please announce yourself when you're speaking, just a quick reminder to do so, so everyone has an idea of who's speaking. Not everyone knows everyone's voices yet. But any more comments or questions about this fiscal report? I want to thank you, Cowell, for that. I've never heard something as succinct as that in all my years, 3 years on the council, so it helps us get a better grasp of what's going on. Over the last year, I've sent out, a couple times we've sent out the bylaws and the documents from the federal government mandating the SRC, and part of our responsibility is making sure, and making sure the services are being provided, is keeping tabs on the fiscal side of things. I think that's been neglected by the council in the past, so I'm glad that this will be part of the conversation moving forward. With that said, I do have a lot of questions about the BEP program and the way we have such a high amount of money sitting there. That'll be addressed later. And then for everything else, it seems to make sense. Again, if anyone has any questions afterwards, feel free to contact Carol. She does a great job of explaining things, and I think we all should commend her for getting this done, because a lot of things and a lot of numbers, I feel, were kept in the dark to the council over the years. And having this be transparent of what we have, what we spent, what we may lose, is very important for us to help us do our work. And I just want to quickly say that I attempted to get this information months and months and months ago, and Carol also attempted to get this information months and months ago, because I had asked, how much do we have left to the end of the fiscal year, and nobody can answer it. And I finally went to ADS and went up the chain, and my answer was, to me, was, I have to ask Carol. And my response to them was, number one, I don't work for Carol, and number two, Carol can't get the information. So I'm glad that she finally did get it, because she can't do her job unless she knows what she has. So us advocating on her behalf and helping support her is the best thing I think we can do. So with that, if there are no other questions or comments, we'll move forward to Deb.
I have a question,
if you
want
to talk about. Yes, sure, Carol.
Sorry, so is this the type of report that the board, that you guys would like to see each meeting, or is there anything that I could change, add to make this more beneficial, I guess?
It's different than what I've experienced in the past. I think it's very helpful to see where we are financially, because that also could shed some light on why there's so much stress, or why you might be feeling squeezed because you don't know what we have or what we can spend. The typical treasurer's report would have what items were spent. As we learned last meeting, time around, that the money doesn't come out of an account labeled SRC. We don't have an account. But there are certain expenses over a certain amount of money that the federal government requires that we approve. Like we had a special meeting for the survey. So I think any big expenditures are helpful for us to see in a positive way where the money's going and how we're helping people. So I think a combination of both. Does anyone else have any comments on that or ideas?
This is John.
This
Carmola.
Is Deb.
So, go ahead, Deb.
Oh no, I would agree with that. Yes, I think that having both items on the financial report would be very, very helpful and transparent.
Agree, John.
So, this is John Carmola. One thing that I was thinking about is that it might be useful to have this in written form. Obviously, a chunk of this will be included in the minutes. But if we could get an actual report on this, maybe not quite to the extent that Carol just went over it, but kind of a summary of the current state, rather than trying to discuss it here extensively and eating up a lot of our meeting time. I know, you know, this took a bit of time, and I think it's very worth it, because we had never had access to this information before. But I would hesitate if we were going to propose doing this for half an hour every meeting. I think that might become time-consuming. If instead we could have it in written form and review a document instead. We could do a smaller update and kind of be aware of major changes during the meeting. For example, you know, if BSBY is able to hire new people, mentioning that during the financial update would be useful. And we could potentially have somewhat of a discussion, but saving all the details for a written summary might be more efficient.
Thank you for that feedback, John. Yeah, I think a hybrid approach to that would be helpful. I think it is important. Again, there are only four or five categories, and now that we have heard the explanation of what the money is used for, I think running through the numbers that might highlight some, why do we have too much or why do we have nothing, I think is important. But you're right, I think this information should be included as an addendum to the meeting minutes. So it's easier for then the secretary trying to regurgitate what you thought you heard or heard from the playback on it. So having that as an attachment, I think would be great. But I don't think it would, I don't think it needs to be an extensive explanation of what everything is moving forward, you know, because people are hearing it now and should understand, you know, the preface of where the money's coming from and when it should be spent. Anything else on
that? That was part of my suggestion for a written document, actually, as well.
Yes.
I think part of the reason we have so much discussion right now is because this is all new to us, and none of us know what these funds mean and what the terms mean. And the reason a written document would be useful is that when we have new members come in, they're going to be in the same position where all of us are familiar with the terminology and the funds, and we can just breeze right through. But a new member would be very new to all of it. So a written document with, you know, a brief summary and definitions, which could just be, you know, a template and copy over from meeting to meeting and then update the numbers accordingly, to provide that information in a full form might be helpful for new people coming onto the council as well.
Understood. And to that point, I think that when we have new members coming in, we need to have sort of a process to onboard them onto the council, because when I came on, I got nothing but the ethics code from the state of Connecticut. I didn't get the handbook or the WIOA documents or the bylaws until this past fall. So we could have a mentoring program of people seasoned on the council and want to help, and assign a new person to catch them, you know, bring them up to speed on all these things. I think that would be of help also. So I should have brought that under membership, but here we are.
Okay. This is John McNichol. My background is a CPA. I've written financial reports forever, and they can get very involved and time-consuming. Just on a technical end of the world, as a blind person, doing it in Excel is much easier to understand than doing it in a PDF document.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, well, I'm hearing no other comments or questions about the fines. Again, I want to thank you, Carol, for that, because I think you've opened up a lot of eyes and ears with those numbers. Deb, if you have any update on the needs assessment and consumer satisfaction surveys that we have coming soon?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, all the members of the focus group agreed that the questions provided, the survey information provided by Carol, for how they did it, and oh my gosh, I always get the state mixed up. You came from
Nebraska.
Nebraska. My apologies. The way things were done in Nebraska all of the focus group members agreed that the questions were good. I'm not able to convert them to meet Connecticut regulations, though, so that's where we left off.
Excuse me, sorry, this is Carol. So just to give an update, so the satisfaction survey, it's ready, CCSU got the consumer names and all that stuff. CCSU is working on getting institutional board approval, which I didn't know needed to happen before they could send the survey out. And so hopefully they'll have that approved this week to do research and studies and that kind of stuff. And then Diana Cohen is going to email me and let me know once that's been approved by CCSU and then once that's the satisfaction survey goes out. The needs assessment questions, if it would be helpful, maybe Mary and I could go through those questions and rework them to fit Connecticut and the Connecticut programs and things that we have. And then once she and I go through those, then we could send them to the work group. Would that be okay?
That sounds good.
Any other questions or comments about the survey? I know they're being worked on, and a lot of it was explained during the May special meeting, which clarified a lot of things for the people who were on the call. Nothing else. We're going to move down to new business, the two conferences which I attended back in April. It was a long week down in Baltimore, Bethesda, Maryland, and there were two. One was the NCSAB, which is the National Council of State Agencies for the Blind, and then there was the NSAVR, which was all about book rehab. It was very eye-opening for me. A lot of it was way over my head as far as what they're talking about, and there were so many anachronisms being used, and some people in attendance complained that, hey, this is my first time here. It was like speaking in code. But I did take away from it that our state is not unique with respect to the problems and successes we're having. You know, there's a lot of most states, I think the majority are sending money back to the federal government. And the Undersecretary of Education for the Department of Education for federal, you know, kind of said, you know, we're all in the same boat, and they're imploring people, if you're having trouble spending the money, let us know and they'll help us. Now, I don't know how much we do in Connecticut as far as sending students outside of Connecticut to receive services, whether it be for O&M, whether it be for pre-employment or pre-education, or just the blindness training. I don't have an idea of how much we do spend on that. I do know that, you know, people who are not being served, and this is not the reason, this is last year or the year before, people who weren't being served, you know, were we just not serving them and sending the money back, or do we not know what to do? You know, why aren't we using, I want to know, like, I met so many pretty enthusiastic vendors who do these services. So if the state, you know, that would be a question for Carol. If the state cannot provide the services, if there are people like waiting in line for services, do we use outside vendors for a lot of things? That's what I came back with that with. Like, why aren't we using the money? And the second thing was that a lot of things don't change. You know, I heard in the last couple of years now the same thing. It has to be consumer-centric, not policy-centric. And I'm told that they say that every single year. But I see with Carol having the desire to make the changes and bring things up to snuff where everyone's getting the best services possible. Though I do appreciate the state spending a lot of money to send me Bethesda, I really don't think it's worth it for them to spend the money to send the chair of the SRC every year, unless we start getting schooled a little bit better locally in the state about what's going on in the agency. And I don't know, again, we mentioned these financials that we just heard, we've not been exposed to really. Maybe they stick them in the end of the annual report, I don't know. But if we don't know what's going on in the VR program, we really can't do our job, which is charged by the federal government, to really oversee the VR program. So I think moving forward in meetings, we should have a part of the VR program maybe explain to us if everyone doesn't know what it is, because we don't know what we should be looking for. And if you look at the charge in the bylaws and the federal documents of what the VR Council is, it's pretty substantial. And if we're not, you know, able to access the information from the Bureau, we're just, I don't want to say wasting time, because it's, the machine's going to move along, but we can't help as much as we can. We need to be more efficient, effective, and helpful to the Bureau, therefore helping this blind of Connecticut. So that's my little spiel, but I do appreciate them sending me down there, network quite a bit, and learn that, you know, there are a lot of blind people in other programs. You know, one thing I did want to mention that, you know, I have a lot of questions for the PEP program, and I'm going to ask the former work group for that. But down in Bethesda, most of the people I met who were either managers or directors or counselors for the PEP program, meaning the Randall-Shepard Act, the vending machine programs, a lot of them were blind. We don't have anyone blind. We have 6 sighted employees. So maybe we can shift that. But that's a rant for another day. Mary or Carol, if you want to mention anything about what you guys, ladies, picked up at the conferences, I'd love to hear that as well.
This is Carol. I will start. Most of the conference, both conferences, the information I was already aware of. It was a very good refresher for me, and I took lots of notes. I'm like, okay, I need to follow up and, you know, make sure we're doing this in Connecticut or in those sorts of things. But I did want to address that we do send clients and have out of state for different things, whether it's education or training, that sort of thing. We have quite a few out of state vendors, and so okay, I would say great. We may have more out of state than in state, actually. But Mary, if you want, I'll let you give more details on that.
Sure. For I'll start with what I got out of the conference, and I've been going to both conferences for many years, and I think don't judge this conference on how it normally
okay.
Very fiscal focus this year, which in
yeah.
I have gone literally to this conference for 21 years, and it has never been like this. I think there's a big push because of the fiscal crisis, basically, with the VR programs, definitely COVID related, staff related, all kinds of issues why, but definitely COVID related. But what I take out of the conference, and even what I took out of this conference, is that now RSA has developed a lot of technical assistance programs out of GW, George Washington University, and other universities throughout the country. And I feel like that it's very nice to be there in person, to be able to connect, put faces and people to the technical assistant programs they have. So I feel like that's like one of the benefits of going to these conferences, is that you get to meet the technical assistance, centers. Like RSA has funded more than I've seen in a very long time. There's a lot of different universities covering pre-ads, covering fiscal, monitoring, all kinds of things. So, I don't know, Carol, if you feel the same way, but I feel like that was something that I took very positive out of that meeting, you know, those conferences, just to be able to put, this is who the person is if I want to go to Prius, this is the person I need to go to for different things. And I agree with you, Phil, that it was very good to hear from other states that we're not in this alone. We're definitely not in this alone. If anything, we kind of walk away feeling better about ourselves sometimes.
Absolutely.
You know? Absolutely. Yeah, so that's kind of what I took out of it. And what I probably take out of it every year is the national connection to other VR programs, in particular the blind agencies. The NCSAB is only for blind agencies, so to be able to have that kind of smaller connection with
individual, you know, the agencies who are working with individuals who are blind. Like Carol said, we with plenty of vendors. We do work with a lot of vendors. It's probably what we do the most now, especially with Priets, which is our transition. So yeah, so we definitely do. Our biggest issue for sure is staffing, which we're trying to move along, but given that, you know, our leftover staff that we have, the current staff that are still here, you know, are doing a great job. We really, you know, have some seasoned staff, some good staff that are left. Our shortage is by far in our transition program. We have no transition program, so, you know, this could be part of our you know, update, but I had given it at the board. We have gone, we don't necessarily have the standards and indicators like we did back in the day, but, you know, we still measure ourselves on how many successful closures come out of our program. And during COVID, we dropped to 52. We came back with 76, and this year we're probably going to hit closer to 96. So we're back to almost pre-COVID numbers. We usually hit between 100, 95 to 100. If it's a great year, 110. So to hit 96 is, you know, a sign that things are good. Our counselors are getting people jobs, you know, and helping them keep their jobs, which is the focus and goal of our program. So we may not be spending the money, but we're spending it on the right things, I think. So, you know, I mean, yes, we could always do better, but, you know, to see those numbers coming through, you know, they're plugging along in spite of all of that. You know, it's unfortunate with the budget, but that's in the 20 years I've been here, it's the opposite. You know, every year we come in, we're like, are we going to go into order of selection? We can't spend our money. So it's just the way it is with COVID. So that's kind of my take on it. But I think there it was a worthwhile conference, and I agree with you, Phil, 110% that it was very technical, and a lot of it was like, whoa, this is way too much. There was a lot of fiscal staff there from other agencies, you know, so yeah. So sorry, that was
Mary, thank you for the reassurance then. John, go ahead.
Quick question. You said number of closures. Can you just quickly define how a case is considered successful?
That's when individuals are successfully employed for a minimum of
90 days.
An individual has to be successfully competitively employed or in services done for 90 days, and then we close them. So we have many clients who are working that don't fall into that category, but these are all the successful closures. That means that they don't need us anymore, and 90 days have gone by, and we have done nothing for them, and they're closed and on their way, you know, working competitively.
So that's what that number means. So that would not include someone who did not obtain employment.
Exactly. So those are the people who are competitively, successfully, you know, employed. So, and, you know, our decrease of numbers in COVID was obviously, you know, because of individuals losing their jobs, the uncertainty of whether they keep their job and going teleworking. So to be able to, like, kind of bounce back, I think, is pretty remarkable. I didn't realize the numbers, and I was in the board meeting, and I was, like, looking it up while I was, like, talking, and I was like, whoa, we're having a great year. So it was encouraging, you know, for my staff, for sure. I think that's encouraging to hear, you know, that, like, we're back to where we were in 2019, and that's
great.
You know, it's good to be back where we were in 2019. We're a small program, so we're not going to be expecting to get 500 closures, you know, so.
Sure.
But that's good for us, so. And that's with being so short-staffed, so I think that's just, you know, it just goes to show that, like, a testament of the staff are out there, you know, contracting out, doing the services, and trying to cover vacant caseloads, and things are looking good, basically. They're on the upswing, if anything. You know, so.
It's good to hear that, and I can hear it in your voice, so it's very positive. And you encouraged me a little bit that I wasn't feeling as stranded as I thought I was down in Bethesda, so maybe I did I learned, like you said, there were a lot of people from the federal government there on a panel, and the one thing I did like about it, they're all accessible. Everyone has their names, their phone numbers, their departments, so should the agency need help, there's someone to go to. So that was positive to see. But, okay, anything else on any comments or questions on anything from any of the reports? Okay, we're going to go next to, we typically have, excuse me, I guess historically, there's a success story each month, and it's great for us to hear how someone helped get, you know, help get a job, help get employed, how they navigated through the system, sharing what helped them and pushed them to get a job or keep a job. Well, I also mentioned last meeting that I really think at times, you know, we're only meeting quarterly, and if we're only hearing good stories, and as most people are making like two or three meetings a year, if we're only hearing good stories, we don't know that sometimes there are some struggles. And Mary brought up a big thing about job retention a few moments ago, and I wanted to do a story in addition to having the success story, a we could have done better story. And Honorata, my wife now, when I met her before we were in Item, she was struggling with keeping her employment in Bridgeport as a Bristol as an art teacher for the town of Bristol, and with RP, her rapidly declining eyesight. She struggled, and I won't put any words in her mouth, but I'll just let her just talk a little bit what she experienced, and hopefully we use it as a roadmap to not follow when we're trying to help people.
Phil, I'm sorry to interrupt, but if you don't mind, we do actually have our success story here today as well.
Yes.
And I believe they were expecting to talk at 10:30, so is there any way that we can kind of push that up first?
Sure,
so that
we can
they
put them
can
first,
leave?
Of course,
Sorry, I think you're planning on staying at least, and I don't know that the success, our success story is, and we're already kind of a little bit behind.
Certainly.
No problem.
All right, so my name is Angelo Itali. I am a VR counselor with Besby. Homa, who's on the call, is my success story. So Homa, she enrolled in VR services with Besby in January of 2016 to go over some of the services. We provided some interview prep to help her prepare for the necessary interviews involved with entering the workforce. As she felt that her eyesight was worsening, we provided a low vision evaluation. The evaluation determined she required new glasses with a strong prescription, which Besby provided. Client referred to Independent Living Solutions for assistance finding employment. When they had a virtual job coach position become available, they offered Homa the opportunity to try the position through the paid internship model. As the position was computer-based, to provide client the best chance at success, a computer stand magnifier was provided for her. Once the paid internship was over, Homa remained on, and she has been successfully working since December 6th of 2022. I've been emailing with the employer about allowing Homa to be available to present on her experience with Besby VR. The employer said, "It's so great, and we absolutely love having Homa on our ILS team. She is the perfect person for the training of clients and sharing her knowledge and skills with our new employers." So I'll let Homa talk a little bit about her experience with VR and Besby.
Great. Welcome.
And thank you so much. As you know, my name is Homa. I was working with the Bisbee a long time, and we were looking for the job for me. Which, to begin with, it was a certain things I was looking to do, and because of the eyesight that I have, which almost I'm legally blind, and I need really big magnifying glasses to work. And Bisbee stood by me and gave me, I can tell you, my confidence a lot that I can do anything that I want to do. I just have to justify from A to B. So if I cannot read, they provide me magnifying glasses. Even the hand magnifying glasses started, and it got the magnifier for the monitor. So I was able to do my job, and when I was working in ILS, Independent Living Solution, which they gave me a job offer, and I took that for the beginning, it was really, really hard a little bit of the reading the screen. And with that magnifying glass for the monitor, it helped me a lot. And since then, I guess it was mid-July that it started last year, over the almost is going to be 1 year that I'm with ILS. I'm really